feeling it. Let's do it. Moose crossings, red hot dogs, missing persons in salty bogs. Up to camp with Stephen King. River curses, Wesley sings. Homegrown horror.
Do we have butts?
Yes, we have butts.
Hello!
Hello!
And welcome to Homegrown Horror. It's our bonus episode. And we went to go see Damnation Land
13. Which, it was also on Friday the 13th.
Ooh,
so,
spooky.
I'm not gonna lie, great. The only thing missing was that there were 11 short films and not 13.
Yeah.
Everything
that was,
else.
That was like missed opportunity, but I get it.
Beautifully lined up otherwise. I am Bea, a co-host.
I'm Jackson, a co-host. Oh, we had such a wonderful time going out to this, what ended up being a very swanky affair.
Yeah. Yes. Jackson did not get the memo on the dress code.
No, I showed up in a flannel and I basically just wore what I wear normally.
You cosplayed a Mainer, and that's what matters.
I cosplayed a Mainer, so I was underdressed, but I was ready to feast upon some art house indie films, mm-hmm. and it was very fun. I wasn't fully certain also what I was in store for,
mm-hmm.
which... I'm not going to knock the advertising on this, but
no.
I really did not know what I was in for.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun once you're in it and enjoying it. I think a lot of favors must have been done for the people that were behind this production to, first off, to have this hosted at the State Theater alone. That's huge.
Which I think it's been there for as long as I can remember.
And it was a good crowd. It wasn't like totally filled up. It wasn't a sold out show, but people did really file in and make the most of the prime seating.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a solid crowd, but not insanely huge. And everyone there was having a great time.
Oh my God.
Crowd was super amped. And again, people just dressed up in such awesome outfits, some more revealing than others. And just, you know, having a grand old time. The events of the evening kicked off with Scaryoke, which we thought wasn't going to happen.
But it did.
But it did happen. We were just kind of hanging out there. We were sipping on some bevvies and just kind of waiting for the show to unroll. And then the Scaryoke happened pretty much like 5 minutes before they were supposed to go, I think, but...
Yeah. Things kind of... I think it fell behind a little bit, but what can you say?
What can you say? What can you do? It's no big deal. Everybody, all six people that went up and sang were fantastic.
They were fantastic.
And hilarious. There was a lot of funny stuff there. They even had the two people that... we're in Rocky Horror Picture Show
at Bedford City Theater, which we've covered actually.
Bedford City Theater.
We've covered as an episode before.
Our spooky, spooky Bedford City Theater
episode.
And they were pretty cool. You know, they're, you know, classically trained folks, so they definitely stood out with their singing. But they sang The Time Warp, which is a very hard song to sing.
And they did fantastic.
Seriously.
I will say, I think our favorite was the last guy came on and did like a bluesy jazz version of Down with the Sickness.
It's hilarious.
Beautiful.
Your mother, get up. Come on, get down with the sickness.
But yeah, so for those of you who don't know, because I was trying to find some more information just on Damnation Land as a whole. So what is Damnation Land exactly?
What is this?
So it is a film festival that is invite only for the directors, not for you. Anybody can go see this, but it happens every year in October and it's been going on for 13 years. I think they took a break during COVID, but it is sort of, if you've been in Portland long enough, I think you know it exists, even if you haven't been to it.
Yeah. It's on the marquee.
Mm-hmm. You'll see it on the marquee. But it is also like genre bending, which we definitely experienced. Like, I think there was a lot more horror comedy.
Very much so.
That was like the thing this year, I think.
I was thinking that there was going to be more serious films, but it was like almost everything had a comedic spin to it, with the exception of a few ones that did very well. Mm-hmm. Thought they shone through. But, you know, normally during these bonus episodes, we kind of just like go through a whole movie and sort of talk about scene by scene. That's really hard to do that for this, since it's all, it's 11 different short films and interstitials. So I think we're just going to break it down with some of the things that
like our highlights.
Our highlights.
Because I do think the other thing that is difficult is I don't know if these will be available for streaming or anything like that. They do have additional showings, which we will talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you are not in the area where they will be doing screenings, it's kind of a toss-up whether or not you'll ever get to see these movies. But what I can recommend is, like, definitely look, like, you can go onto the Damnation Land page, look at the people who have posted about their work, go onto their Instagrams, things like that, and figure out what they're doing if they are showing these things. But I definitely think that Maine is one of those places where, like, there is a poppin' film scene, indie film scene here.
Yeah, for sure.
And there always has been. Because Allegra and I have both gone to school with, worked with, known so many people who are either, they work on films, they direct themselves, or, and I saw a lot of them there, and that was really fun. And Jackson was like, you know everybody. And I'm like, oh, I'm turning into my grandfather. And, you know, just seeing all these familiar faces, especially even people from, like, high school, and I was like, I am 95% sure I know you. It was really fun. And realizing, like, how interconnected, like, because that's the thing that is so interesting to me, is, like, all of the worlds collide. Like, people I know from, I've worked with them in theater or, like, in my day jobs, or I went to school with them in high school or college, they all have kind of met and intersected with this common hobby. For some people, it's a hobby. For a lot of them, this is what they do.
Yeah. This is their aspirational, like, what they want to end up doing for the rest of their lives. Yeah.
So I highly recommend, if you're not, like, I don't think we've actually watched any indie movies for the bonus episodes, really.
Because
they've all had, even things that had more of an indie vibe, like Cryptid and Black Rock, have had some serious studio backing in right. one way or another.
Yeah. There's got to be one, at least, we've seen.
I don't think so.
What backing did Cryptid have?
It's not, it didn't, it was one, the studio. I can't remember.
The studio.
I can't remember.
Lionsgate.
Maybe? Oh, yeah, it was, well, Lionsgate wasn't the studio, it was the... Anyway, I think that might be the closest thing.
Maybe. That's but this crazy. this is really cool. And I mean, this is like, I think even a step like, and even is, more independent than an indie
this
film
is,
necessarily.
This is homegrown.
This is all locals.
This is all literally
local folks.
This puts the homegrown in horror.
In the horror of homegrown.
Homegrown horror.
Whatever this show
is called. So I guess I want to start with, what was your favorite film of the night?
It was hard to really figure that out. There's so many funny films that I enjoyed, and I think the funny is what got me here. So thinking about it a little bit, you know, I originally thought maybe I'd be more into Deathbrella was just funny on its surface. It's just about a killer umbrella, basically. Just like the acting is choppy, sure, but it's a very funny little short.
I also liked the umbrella. It was like an old school parasol.
Yeah.
Had the fun shape, but that was by...
Mark J. Parker.
Yes.
Very funny. So it was just, yeah, killer umbrella. It's like basically a lady is pointing an umbrella at people indoors and then they start choking and dying.
It's like bleeding. It's like Death Note.
It's a Death Note umbrella. It's Death Note umbrella. And then eventually the umbrella attacks people. So
that was your favorite. Yeah. Cause when we immediately left, that was your gut reaction.
That was my gut reaction.
In the car, you were like Death Umbrella.
But now I think my favorite one is Reverse the Curse. I think it's the first one, honestly.
Okay. Which is, by
Aaron Enberg.
Yes.
And that was fucking hilarious. It was like,
it was a great opener.
It was a great opening film. It had like, it was pretty long too, for what, you know, all of these films, all 11 of these films and interstitials were in an hour and 45 minutes.
Yes.
But Reverse the Curse was a good chunk of time. It's about a PhD aspiring pianist who's writing a composition and needs to present that as their thesis or something. I didn't know that was a thing. I thought it was just a music theory or whatever. I guess.
I think it depends, because if you're a performance major,
then you should be performing.
Because USM, I don't know if has like a doctorate program or a master's program, but like I knew people who were theory students and I knew people who were performance students.
So this person,
so there's a difference.
The hero of the story finds some demonic European
sheet music
that she plays, and it turns one of the pianos into the demonic piano that then like chases her throughout where she is. It's hilarious.
It was hilarious. I also think that the set design and the sheet music itself, excellently done.
Yeah.
Like, it was so, I'm like, nah, man, don't touch that.
Some good stuff, man. There. Don't touch that.
Put that
in a museum.
But also something that was really cool is like all the pianos kind of start playing by themselves.
Yeah.
And I'm like, excellent, like, effects work.
Yeah, yeah.
As well. That was a great way to sort of kick it off.
It was a fantastic way to kick it off.
She was so chill about it, though.
It was pretty. The hero did have sort of like a, kind of vibe.
And it was sort of like, her hand gets like trapped in the piano and there's like blood everywhere. And she's just sort of like, really?
Yeah. And it was all, what was funnier is that when she does finally solve her conflict, she does not take a break or anything.
No.
She's immediately on the phone and says, hey, like a person came by earlier and was like, you should go out. But she's like, no, I got to finish my piece. So then she was like, hey, I finished early. I'm going to come over.
Girl's like, I am getting out of here.
I'm outie. She's like unfazed. Does not mention the demon piano.
No, not at all. And I feel like it's really funny because it's like the scariest thing for her is probably the bills she's going to have to pay after getting her master's.
Oh, seriously. Yeah. Wild.
So wild. So good. Like, she... Also, there's a part where she, like, pulls out a guitar.
She pulls out a guitar and she rips her skirt.
It's very sexy.
Fucking great.
Oh, my God. It was so funny. It hit, like, on a lot of the things that I think we comment on in horror movies.
Yeah, no. It was very much trying to just... play to the tropiness. One bit that really got me was that she's hiding alongside a wall and there's like a doorway kind of behind her, and the piano, and we're talking about an upright piano.
Yes.
And it's, so she's like in the hall and then all of a sudden you see the piano like leaning around the corner.
I loved the fact that it was the piano and we didn't just get like a demon.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the piano. It's
straight up
the
piano.
Fucking piano.
It's and like that.
It's
that's
clever to me because the piano moves. And that's also what's funny is when you realize you're like, no, the piano's fucking chasing her.
It's so funny. It reminded me of that one level in Mario 64 when you're in Boo's mansion.
Yeah.
And you find a piano room and the piano tries to attack you. It's just like that.
This is a boss in Mario. But no, it was really good. It was a strong start. It definitely set the tone as well for like, okay, there's going to be horror, but also it's not all just straight horror.
Right. Yeah. What did you enjoy, my friend? What stood out to you?
I feel biased.
Why are you biased?
Because my favorite was... So I went to school with Hannah Perry Shepherd, and her movie was my favorite, which was Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
You might have bias. It's fine.
It might be biased, because also I knew people who were in the movie, worked on the movie, but I think for me... I mean, we all know, like, my favorite horror movie is fucking Midsommar.
Yeah.
So is it a surprise that this was my favorite?
It had all the elements that you like. Ribbons and trees, women in white dresses.
Witch trees.
Witch trees.
Because also, the witch is also my, probably, it's up there.
Spiraling for insanity.
Yeah. And the acting was so, because the thing that I also liked about the acting is a lot of it was silent.
Yes.
There was not a lot of talking.
No, which is awesome. I love that
and
part.
Just the present. Joanna Clark was the lead, and her facial performance did a lot for me. It was, yeah, well, like, so the understanding is, like, this is an abortion allegory.
Yep.
And so we have, I'm going to say like 50.
Best abortion allegory ever made.
Yeah. So it's like 50s.
Yeah, it's 50s.
50s. They live like they're 40s, 50s, they're yeah, yeah, they're in this farmhouse in the middle of nowhere. You know, we basically start with the radio is playing and the baby is screaming.
Yep.
And so we get this idea that she is. The mother is overtaxed.
Yeah.
In every sense of the word. And the husband is distant. It's like they've done their duties.
Very cold husband.
They've done their duties and now she has to deal with it.
Yeah. She's got to take care of this little kid and man the home.
And so it's really interesting because there's something like, even if you just take it at face value and not like as an allegory, it's also super interesting because if you like, you think of like all the old wives' tales that there are about certain things, that's sort of what we get. She puts her baby in this little, this basket.
Yeah.
Like
a baby basket.
Yeah. And she goes out into the woods and there are little pink ribbons marking her trail.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just sort of like one of those things where it's like, oh, all women in this world that's been created, they know where to go.
They know where to go.
They know where to go. They know what to do.
This was your Planned Parenthood before it was organized.
Yes, it was a witch tree. So she finds this tree.
I'm going to go see my family planning doctor. It's a tree in the woods.
So she goes to the tree and she basically offers the baby to it and she becomes young and beautiful again.
Well, you just skipped over. She buries the fucking baby.
I said she offered the baby. I'm trying to be nice.
You tried to be nice.
She buries the baby.
That got a big gasp from the crowd to, like, see her digging it up. And everyone's like, what the fuck?
The tree gives her this blood. She accepts it. It's... Now I'm just going through point by point, but like the imagery and all of the things.
Beautiful camera work.
And the other thing is like, I also like movies like this where it looks like it was filmed down by Allegra's parents' house. Like the house, the style is the same, the sort of open fields. It's in the middle of the day. Again, I love daytime horror.
Yeah.
I love it. And again, I love horror comedy, but just how this was played straight did a lot for me, and it stood out. Again, might be a little biased, but I love it, and you know, the spiraling of her sort of realizing what she'd done and trying to take it back. I was like, girl, you cannot take this back.
You buried that baby.
But it's one of those things. It was. Oh, the hubris of woman. of getting to a breaking point.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because we do see this in horror, because I just listened to Horror Virgin just did an episode on The Bone Woman,
mm-hmm.
which gives me sort of the same vibe. So, like, this is something that's also being explored in horror with, like, what's going on in our world. Just sort of, like, the experience of women.
Yeah.
And I just... It was really good. Everything, like, again, acting, cinematography, the vibes. This was definitely, like, completely up my alley. And this was really the only one that I really knew about going into it. Because, again, I knew a lot of people who worked on it.
I mean, you know, you said maybe you're biased, but I mean, it does have some of the best camera shots in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
It has some of the most interesting, I mean, symbolism to it. And I mean, there's a lot of tricks that are, that go really well, sort of like when she's shutting down verbally as her husband's yelling at her towards the end. That was really interesting. And yeah, I agree with you. The fact that there really wasn't that much dialogue. The dialogue was unimportant. You got everything about what's happening directly from the movie. And and something I've complained about many times has been like, don't fucking just dump the information on me. Just show me. Just do it. And this fucking movie did a great job of showing and not telling.
It didn't hold your hand. And it sort of leaves you with like, again, we can say that this is an allegory for abortion. But it can be more than that. It can be personal. And I think not having that dump, you can really sort of graft your own experience onto it in your own, you know, do what you want with this kind of thing. Because it's not giving you everything. It's sort of like, here's what I'm giving you. Take it.
I mean, there was a lot of other movies that stood out, though. I mean, I think everybody that submitted something, it was a lot of fun.
Oh my, to see and it that all come
together.
Absolutely. The other one that I wanted to talk about was Spiraling.
Oh my gosh, that was like
BSB.
That is BSB Productions. So it's the three main folks. I forgot.
It's all their Bodhi names. Ouellette, Samantha Quirion, and
Ben Rogers.
Shit. Sorry, Ben. I think his name is Ben.
Ben Boy. Benny Boy. I'm going to call you Benny Boy, Benny Boy.
Okay, I will say one thing that was really hard is, like, trying to get the, like, pairing up the names with the movies because I did not bring a notepad.
Why didn't everybody?
Ben Rooker. So it's Bodhi Ouellette, Sammy Quirion, and Ben Rooker.
Good job.
Yeah, so we're going to cut out the part where I fucked that up.
Can't cut it. Nope.
Can't do that. So this was fascinating. This had, I think, the thing that, like, everybody started cheering when we realized there's animation in this.
Yes, everyone was very excited about the animation. I think the crowd was very lukewarm to the film at first. Honestly, just
it,
even
it
here,
starts off
I heard
way.
Some people behind me like chittering that oh, this is just whatever. But then like it unfolded and everyone started really enjoying. And yeah, there is a component where basically what happens, it's very cool. It's all charcoal drawing as well, or most of it. I mean, a lot of this ends up being CGI or however they did it. But basically, it's a woman that's having a mental breakdown who has isolated herself from everything. She's gone crazy, spiraling, and has basically made a bunch of charcoal drawings and have posted them on every surface, walls, floor, ceiling of her room. One of the drawings ends up talking to her and is the inner demon of her depression that is keeping her isolated and she has to overcome it. So it's really fun. And the drawing moves around and is like becomes a monster at some point.
At first it was just like a little bit of movement. It was like, and then like
it started really moving around constantly.
Yeah, because she was like, okay, I'm going to go out. I'm going to go with friends. And it's like, no, that's not the deal that we made.
Yeah.
You're here. You're safe. This is your little depression nest. And then it becomes a monster and it comes off the and then you're like, holy shit. And then she goes through the window and it's this whole world.
It's
a full, and it was like.
It's like a depressing chalk zone.
Yeah, it was. But I feel like it was so impressive for the fact that, like, again, all of these things are like, these are nonprofit. Like, a lot of these people don't turn the people, these directors and actors, they do not turn a profit on this. And the fact that, like, there's some real talent on display in with the animation in this movie.
Yeah, there really is. And I think it ended up having some of the longest credits out of all the films that we saw this
probably
that evening.
For that reason.
Yeah, because it's a lot of time to animate all that. I am curious how long this, what ended up being, what, it was like 10 minutes?
Yeah, probably.
I'm curious how long it ended up taking them to make, because that could have not been easy to get that all going.
Absolutely not. And yeah, I think that one was actually, again, it was like a sleeper hit.
Yeah.
Kind of. Where it was like, at first you're just sort of like, okay. And then you're like, oh.
It was the...
Oh. Shit!
What really got people hooked was just, yeah, the heavy focus on the CGI effects. I think within a local film scene, that's just probably very rare to see that.
Yeah.
So it must have been really fun to have that, you know?
In a similar vein, one of my favorite interstitials was Musa, by Josie Colt, and it had like stop motion.
Yeah, it had stop motion for pretty much all of the weird supernatural effects happening around the main character.
Yeah, because it was, again, it's sort of like, it's this kind of artist that's spiraling. Yeah. I feel like that was almost a theme.
There was a lot of sort of lot like, of women spiraling.
We're like,
yeah.
was that an un no,
I think it's just
was there
probably,
a brief.
You know, I feel like art just kind of imitates life, and maybe I think a lot of these people that are producing these films felt a little out of control.
Troll.
Over the last few years, maybe.
Absolutely, but this was also impressive because, again, very short, but it had some really cool, like, stop motion stuff going on and sort of, you know, creepy people in costumes showing up, like, with masks on. And that sort of gives me, like, Harvey vibe, maybe. Are you familiar with Harvey? It's a play about a guy who has a imaginary friend who is a giant man-sized rabbit.
Nope. Is this Donnie Darko?
Oh, yeah. That probably would have been a better one-to-one, but it did give Donnie Darko vibes. Man, fuck the rabbit. Fuck that guy.
Why are you wearing that stupid human suit? The other thing that I really liked was I did like Sweet Meats, because I think that was more of the creepier ones.
Very Cronenberg.
Yeah, there was a lot more. Everyone was fucked up in this movie. it is taking place in this weird, bizarro world. Like of society where teenage girls are spending their slumber party making out with severed heads.
Bruh. Fucking bruh.
Yeah, that was fucking weird. That was very uncomfortable. And then you start there and you end with dad, Cronenberg dad is fused to a couch and I gotta feed him some soup.
And also, you know, I'm feeding dad soup and mom's just downstairs in her living room.
Human furniture room.
That was funny.
That like, was
she
funny.
She turns the light. Like, she's got this guy, and, like, you think they're about to have an affair, but, you know, she has him undressed, and then she puts a lampshade on his head.
And a light bulb,
in his mouth. Uncle Fester in it. She turns the light on. And, yeah, it's just these dudes. Who they're alive. Like, this is not like
they're not taxidermy.
Yeah, this is not taxidermy or anything, but they're just like her furniture. Like her couch is two guys sitting next to each other. Her coffee table is this one guy who's holding up a slab of glass. Like, it was really funny and that got a laugh from the audience. This was by a sister team, Rebecca and Emily Marshall. And I just have so many questions.
I don't know what was up with. I want to know what was up. Why was dad all Cronenberged?
Yeah. What happened to dad?
What happened there?
I think this is a very interesting one where it's like, there's a lot of world building, but you have to be comfortable not having any answers.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's just like, what the fuck? It's just like, everyone's messed up. That's what we got. And everyone's cool with whatever weird shit's
happening around them. That's what you've got.
Yeah. I did think it was funny, like the the setup of the all the human guy furniture, and then the daughter comes down the stairs and said, "Mom, what the fuck? You said you'd stop doing this." It's like it's just constantly happening.
Yeah, it was very weird, very uncomfortable. I think the cinematography was really good.
Oh yeah, that was
especially excellent. Since it was such a dark movie, like dark in terms of lighting.
Yeah, I feel
like that can be really hard.
Yeah.
Too. So the very interesting, and it seems to be the Portland Press Herald darling. A lot of the articles that came out about Damnation Land, they interviewed the sisters. Like this was like the one that a lot of people I think knew about.
Portland Press Herald's got a hard on for this one. Good, but hey, man, there are other movies too.
Yeah, I kind of wish that there were more interviews and stuff with some of the other
just
directors.
A wider range of like, yeah, because we were looking online to see if we could figure out some more information about all this, and very sparse. We know that you guys over at Damnation Land, you got a small, dedicated team, but well, yeah, we want more info, but I guess, you know. Y'all know each other anyway.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, oh, why would we share information of something that
everybody already knows
Mark J. Parker, what his deal is.
But I think all in all, they were all very good. But those were my personal highlights. Is there anything else you want to talk about?
I wish I had the exact director's name for this one. But one of my films that I really enjoyed was Does the Ocean Ever Get Tired? Mm-hmm. Just because it was very different. It wasn't a very scary movie, but it was just, yeah. It was kind of goofy. Basically, it's just about a hitman who's having a philosophical debate, basically with himself.
Yeah.
Over does natural occurrences in the universe, like, feel fatigued, basically. And then how he's relating that to his life of like how he feels like he's the ocean, just kind of like moving in and out. But maybe the life that he's chosen for himself isn't the one that necessarily he should have just followed the flow of, mm-hmm. is what the vibe I was getting from. And yeah. Then, you know, you end the movie with somebody getting shot. So we love that.
First person POV, you're the guy getting shot, was really like,
interesting choice. Loved it.
Yeah, that was very shock. Like, I was like, oh, shit.
Shock value. Yeah, for sure. But also, I did think that ending was interesting because it was sort of like the guy is giving some feeling of sincerity, but it was not sincere. Basically, he was like giving the guy that was a hostage a coin flip chance to like live. But that wasn't what it actually was. It was just a sleight of hand to maybe make him feel better before he got shot in the face.
Yeah, maybe make you feel a little bit better.
I hope you aren't so sad that I shot you in the face.
But great showing this year. This was my first Damnation Land. Obviously your first Damnation Land. Do you want to go next year?
Yeah, why not? I'll wear my lab coat next time. I'll dress up
I
like...
I want to see you get
Dr.
fancy.
Frankenstein.
I want you to be fancy.
I could be a fancy little vampire boy.
I could be fancy. If you missed Damnation Land and you're like, well, shit, some of these sound really cool. I want to hear about the stuff that they didn't talk about.
You know
about.
What I'll wear next
what?
Year?
What?
I'll wear the David S. Pumpkin suit.
Yes! So... you know what, you'll be able to spot Jackson in the crowd next year.
Yep.
But if you're like, I'm not in Portland, I want to see these things. I want to see the things that they didn't talk about. Well, they do have additional screenings. So this year, on Saturday, October 21st, they will be at the Magic Lantern Theater in Bridgeton, Nickelodeon Cinema in Portland on October 26th, Evening Star Cinema in Brunswick on October 27th, the Center Theater in Dover Foxcroft on October 29th through November 2nd.
Wow.
So if you're in New Hampshire, you also can take a look at Damnation Land Films and get a taste of the way life should bleed. So this was super fun, and I very much enjoyed going out and doing something.
It was a lot of fun to go out, do this for a reason. It was very enjoyable. Go check it out. You got time.
And also follow them on Instagram. They're DamnationLand207. You can also see a little bit more information about the directors. They did the one thing that I will say is the reason it was so hard is because they announced all the directors but didn't say what movies they directed. So that was sort of like, oh, there were some people I knew who what film went with them, but it was kind of trying to figure that out and puzzle piecing it a little bit. But again, all these people, they do this because they love it, and I highly recommend supporting them. Oh, there's also going to be a DVD.
There's going to be a DVD
every year. So if you would like to also own it, so if you can't, you know, you're like, I can't make it there, you're not able, you know, and these, maybe they aren't available streaming anywhere.
Buy the disc!
You can buy the DVD and help support future years of Damnation Land.
Thanks very much, everybody.
Jackson forgot how this works. So
I was literally about to end the episode and like, wait, no, there's something else we need to do.
Wait a minute, I feel like I'm missing something. Yes, you can reach out to us at homegrownhorrorpod@gmail.com or on Instagram at homegrownhorrorpod. If you want to, you can also leave us a response in our Q&A section, which is now on Spotify, or you can leave us some stars and a review on Apple Podcasts. Most of all, we're just very happy that you're here to listen to us talk about local film, the local horror scene, all those goths and ghouls that are out there that are working really hard to make Maine the place where life should bleed.
Thank you, you little freaks. We love you. Bye!